And here we are, Cinema Squabble, episode 28, or season 2, episode 3.
Number 203.
Number 203. 203. Got that squared away right off the bat. Who are we? What do we do? A number of Seattle's film critics. You may have read our materials and things such as the Examiner or Seattle Gay News or
MovieFreak.com.
MovieFreak.com. All perfect examples. My name's Adam Gerke. I do a writing for Newswire here in Seattle. Also do work on radio and TV. So the point is, we're all film critics.
He's famous.
Whatever. But the point is, we're all film critics. We gather in theaters several times a week, and the discussion that we have right here and now is very similar to the discussion we actually have in theaters before we actually see some of these films.
We're this snobby in real life.
Right. And there's no lie in that whatsoever. So here we are, episode 28, What's Going On? By the way, you can find us at cinemasquabble.com. You can catch us on iTunes. You can also find us on Stitcher. Very handy. But tonight's episode, or today's episode, depending on when you're listening, we're talking Deadpool, The Witch. We've got a lightning round of a whole bunch of other films.
Lightning Round Returns.
The return. Return of Lightning Round, and then digging into Oscar.
Oscar chat.
And all things Oscar, who's going to win, who we think's going to win, who we think we'd like to win, all that sort of stuff. We'll try and dig into all the details, the nuts and the bolts, coming up in just a bit.
You're making me make my predictions a week early. I see how you are.
Right? See, so where I work, MJ McDermott, meteorologist at Q13, has put together the Oscar ballots, and we all try and fill it out, by the way. And I have not filled my ballot out yet.
Filling it out tonight,
ooh,
baby.
So I have to get my mindset correct. And there's money riding on this.
Money.
So I don't want to lose my dollar on this. I've lost every other year. But that's because I think in terms of me, not in terms of Oscar. So,
we will teach you.
By the way, did you know we are recording this on the 18th? You know what is significant about cinema and the 18th of February?
No.
See? Buona Devil. Buona Devil, 1953. Brian, you'll love this because I know how much you love 3D film. It was the first feature-length 3D film released here in the U.S. There it was.
There you go.
Buona Devil. On this day. So
I like some 3.
So, right. But you know what I'm saying.
I know. Hate everything.
It's kind of sucked the soul out of so many things. Hey, but things that maybe don't have the soul sucked out of them, how about Deadpool? Tell us a little bit about this.
That's up to you. Deadpool. It made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money.
I am the resident comic book nerd, mm-hmm, your weekly or monthly buyer, what have you, your Comixology, your comic stops.
Mm-hmm.
I got into comics as a kid, pretty young, but it was summer 98, I got really back into them, and mm-hmm, I'm at the comic shop trying to look for new stuff to buy, like a month back into going into stuff. I see Cable, who, if you're a comic book person, knows is Cyclops' son from the future, part cyborg, all that kind of stuff. It's on the cover of Deadpool, a character I'm familiar with. He is the merc with a mouth, the assassin who's also a sass talker. I go, I'll try this. I'll try this Deadpool book, Deadpool number 21, written by Joe Kelly,
mm-hmm,
and loved it. Fell in love with the character.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my all-time favorite comic book characters. But the thing is,
why do I get the feel like you're setting us up for a letdown?
Well, a thing a lot of comic book nerds don't talk about when they talk about transition to movies is there's a lot of bad comics out there.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Joe Kelly run was a particularly good run of this character. He's the assassin. He's a bad guy who's trying to figure out not just if he can be a hero, but whether he can even be like a decent guy. And there's a lot of good stories, mm-hmm, and there's a lot of bad ones, and there's a lot of different takes on it. And the movie goes for kind of a hybrid of all of them, where you have this fast-talking, kind of almost like a rundown of a BuzzFeed, a news feed of what's happening, pop culture and all that kind of stuff. South Park, Family Guy, just rambling off his head. Lots of cursing, lots of crudeness. That's mm-hmm not innately bad.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of all this is your standard superhero, good guy, tries to save the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And amidst all this is also them trying to kind of take the mick out of your standard superhero movie, kind of push the cliches, make fun of all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, it still is all those cliches in many ways. It is still a generic, boring villain. They say at the beginning, there's depending on who you ask, very clever or kind of not that clever, if you ask me. Opening credits, it's like, it's the generic superhero. It's the
generic bad guy with a British accent.
And I'm like, that's clever. But if you still spend a lot of the runtime doing that, I'm not saying you can't do that, but it doesn't help. And I won't say the movie's bad. I don't think this is a bad movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a dull one. Hmm. And Adam, I know you're a bigger fan.
I am on the other side of that fence.
Okay.
I enjoyed the heck out of this film, and I enjoyed it for the reason purely out of the fact that it's perfectly obscene in every possible way.
Is it,
and
though?
It's really... Okay.
It reaches out to be obscene. It does exactly what you know it's supposed to do. You know he's supposed to be. It's Ryan Reynolds, man.
I don't like Ryan Reynolds. See, that's another thing.
That's the thing.
I don't think he's bad in the movie.
It's what Ryan Reynolds does best, which is they cut him loose.
Ryan Reynolds' voice.
He does the voice. He does the fast, wisecracking humor. And it's what we've come to know and love from things like Waiting or...
Love?
Van Wilder.
Man, the guy from Van Wilder and Waiting hasn't broken out yet. Oh my gosh, poor guy.
But there is a certain audience that likes this humor, and
yes, a big audience.
This is better humor than those movies.
Yeah,
and the
humor that's written here actually is firing on all cylinders. I mean, there is laugh out loud stuff, and the hit count, as you would call it, you know, I thought it was much more on beat, on pace.
I thought the hit count was very low. There's a great Zamboni joke.
No.
Which I thought was good. But you could predict. So I'm sitting with a good friend of mine before the movie and talking to the other critics and stuff. And I'm like, I bet we can predict what's going to happen. And there will be a naked man's bum pretty early, I bet. Someone will probably get shot up the bum.
Hmm.
And it takes about, 2 minutes till that happens? Am I wrong, Sarah? Am I wrong on this guess?
Maybe a little longer.
Do you think it's crude? Sure.
Yeah.
But crude does not necessarily mean good. And I don't see what's innately good in this.
Here's what I'll say. The movie is a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
I actually had a great time watching the movie. It reminded me a lot of Kingsman, the Secret Service.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is, while I sort of enjoyed Kingsman, the Secret Service, when I watched it, I had tons of reservations that kind of drove me a little bit nuts.
Hmm.
And as I kept thinking about the movie, those reservations grew. And then when I watched it again, those reservations went to the point where I actually kind of didn't like the movie anymore.
Hmm.
I'm having the opposite reaction to Deadpool.
No.
I like Deadpool because they actually craft a character for Wade Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
There is a three-dimensional, semi-complex character there who goes through a journey.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
That said, for a movie that is getting celebrated for, you know, shaking up the superhero norm and for doing things different and being such an R-rated, vulgar masterpiece, okay, we had Super from James Gunn a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Much better movie that actually did subvert the superhero drama genre. And was a lot more daring than this movie is.
Mm-hmm. Would you call this more opiate for the masses, though?
A little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is the basic origin story.
Mm-hmm.
I just liked the components of it enough that I enjoyed the film. I am legitimately shocked by the box office and by the reaction that people have had to this film.
Really? Shocked in what regard?
Just how much people seem to be in love with this motion picture.
See, I'm not...
That surprises me. It does not surprise me that they like it. Mm-hmm. I did expect them to like it. I was not expecting what has happened. I mean, speaking of James Gunn again, who I guess just started principal photography on Guardians of the Galaxy 2 yesterday, he predicted the moment this movie made $35 million on its opening day, he predicted that studios would fall over themselves to make the next R-rated superhero movie.
Yeah.
And he said the mistake would be making it R-rated just for the sake of making it R-rated. You have to pick the right property.
Yeah, there's got to be a reason to make it R.
And we've already got our first announcement in that the next Wolverine sequel is going to be rated R.
Well, they've talked about doing an R Wolverine for a while.
And this just gave them all the confirmation in the world that they want.
All X-Men to do that with.
Sure.
Wolverine, you could do that.
And I'm okay with it with Wolverine, but James Gunn's right. This is not going to be the first one, and there are going to be ones that are going to be R-rated that we're going to sit there and go, there's no reason for this.
The worst time in comic book modern history. It's the early 90s when Deadpool was created by total hack Rob Liefeld.
Mm-hmm.
Total hack. It was off Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen becoming popular, and it was dark books doing well, and every comic book's like, let's get some more blood. Let's kill some more people. Let's draw some more lines. Let's throw some more pouches on everybody. Let's make everything darker. Mm-hmm. Dark is not innately bad, but if you're just doing it to hop on the train, most of the time it's going to be bad. Mm.
So where does Watchmen fall on this? Because that doesn't exactly
talk about
hit.
The film.
Sure,
the film is not very good. Total dud.
Right,
because
rated R.
Overly faithful. Now there have been good rated R superhero movies.
Yes.
The first Blade movie's quite good. The second movie's got its.
I think the second movie's better.
Got its qualities. The third one stinks and also has Ryan Reynolds. Not a.
But it's actually good in the movie.
If we're going to be critical of rated R action or rated R superhero sort of films. There have already been a slew
there's
of them.
Been a
this
lot.
Is not the
it's
first
like
one
like
to come along.
Everything in this there's film, it's not original.
No, there's you been know? Three Punisher films. Three of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All of them are rated
Marvel
R,
Comics
and all of them are terrible.
Marvel Comics has made two in the past 6 years R-rated movies about kind of twisted, sass-talking people
sure.
in a rated R film.
Yeah. I guess the point I'm driving at, though, is that so James Gunn is saying, well, if this makes money because it's rated R, they're going to fall over themselves to make more rated R films. I think I'm going to call BS on that because they were already making the R-rated films to begin with.
But they weren't this kind of money.
Well, but they weren't making this kind of successful film before either.
Well,
yeah, and that doesn't mean they're going to emulate that. They're just going to look at what the components were of this one, and they're going to try to copy it without actually making sure that the material is appropriate for
and
it.
And I think that's more accurate. I think that's a more accurate statement.
Marvel, let's be fair, Marvel has two television series that if they were in theaters would be rated R.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Daredevil and Jessica Jones would be rated R, especially Jessica Jones.
Okay.
And they deserve to be. And they work. So if Marvel does want to go in that direction, they could.
Yeah.
They've shown that they have the capability to do so. I just think that the success of Deadpool is going to make somebody say to themselves, well, gosh, why can't Captain Marvel be rated R?
Well, but but this is also so much the story of everything else made in art.
Sure.
Take bands from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I'll take Poison for $3,000, Alex. I mean, that's basically, I mean, that's how they were made. I mean, it was a demo tape pulled out of a box, and it was like, put enough money behind them, it'll work. And it did.
I'm just saying we're about 2 years away from the candle box of superhero movies.
Oh, man.
And I am not looking forward to the candle box of superhero movies.
You hurt me here in my heart part.
I hope to.
So, okay, so theater rent skip, Brian, where are you coming in?
It's a skip. It's not a hard,
what?
This is a piece of garbage skip, but it's it's dull.
All right, and Sarah, you've seen it twice.
It's a minor theater.
Minor theater.
But I mean, I'm still going to go theater. I liked it enough to say theater.
Okay, and I'm with you on that too, theater. So I guess we're very clearly split on this. Now, we've got a big film to talk about here coming up in a second, The Witch. But in the last several weeks, there have been... I don't know.
Just 2 weeks. Those 2 weeks.
Yeah, a lot of things that have come out. So we got to bust out lightning round here.
Uh-oh.
Lightning round.
Lightning round.
Right. So, Sarah, are you prepared? We've got the music ready. We're queued up. You're leading us off here.
What am I leading us off with?
How to be single.
Really? Oh, you're going to give me that
Hit the
one.
Music.
All right. So ready? How to be single.
How to Be Single is about Alice, a recent college graduate who comes to New York City to become a lawyer. She broke up with her boyfriend. She's single. She meets Rebel Wilson. They go party. There's a lot of partying. There's a lot of sex. There's a lot of people having sex and partying.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the whole movie. What it proves is that Dakota Johnson, who was in 40 Shades of Grey last year. 50 Shades of Grey, whatever it is.
It could be 40 of them.
She is a rising star. She is going to be fantastic. She is going to get a great movie. It also proves that Leslie Mann is a singular talent who deserves her own Oscar-worthy movie. She's fantastic. The movie is funny. It's enjoyable. It's instantly forgettable.
Uh-huh.
I think I beat it. Why are women in these movies always just lawyers? They have no other careers.
Well, they make good money.
She's technically a paralegal in this one.
While we're on it, we got 20 seconds. I think the unparalleled joke in all of this. So Dakota Johnson, she becomes, well, she goes, leaves school.
You're donezo,
but
baby.
The point is, she goes on to 50 Shades of Grey. So she has all of her men. So there
basically,
we go.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Brian, Zoolander 2.
Zoolander go. Number 2. It's Zoolander, but again.
Uh-huh.
We all remember Zoolander. It was quite good. Some people weren't a fan. Zoolander's great. Zoolander 2 is pretty boring. It's the same movie except he's got a kid now. It's all the same cameos. It's new cameos. It is a horrible hit ratio joke. It's not that you won't laugh. It's that you will laugh once every 13 and a half minutes. Mm. Sarah, somehow, even though you're not a particular fan of the original Zoolander, this one worked a little more for you. I would love to hear in 30 seconds or less.
I'm not going to say it worked more. I think the first film is smarter. I think the first film is more prescient. I just laughed.
I can't
fault a film for making me laugh. There was enough stuff in here.
Can you
that
cite
made
a funny
giggle.
Gag in the movie?
Yes. I think the running gag with Owen Wilson and his orgy is very funny.
Keep Sutherland showing up. Repping. I like the whole elf
ruining
girl.
that cameo.
Hey, what?
All right. So Zoolander 3, not so great.
Zoolander 2. It's
or yeah, Zoolander 2. 3. We're on that.
Don't wish.
Okay, so that brings us to Touched with Fire, which is
Fire!
Touched with Fire. Fire! Katie Holmes and a guy by the name of Luke Kirby. They both happen to be poets. They both happen to be directed by Paul Dalio. This is a story of bipolar love. They're both bipolar poets. They meet in a mental hospital. They fall in love. And for as high as they soar, they fall just as hard.
No.
And will they balance? Very accurately portrayed, I guess, issue of bipolarism, I think, throughout the whole film. The catch is that we don't learn a whole lot more new about being bipolar. And therefore, the film just kind of sits there and does its thing. It's an interesting semi...
How's Katie Holmes?
Interesting love
story.
Like,
I've always liked Katie Holmes. I want her to get a good role again.
She does fine. She does great. In fact, I think both of them, her and Luke Kirby, are fantastic. I think they're great actors. Luke Kirby has a long career ahead of him. He reminds me of a very young Mark Ruffalo.
And I've heard a lot about the director.
And, yep, also an interesting cat. I just don't know if the entire film itself is going to have the stick-to-itiveness to go anywhere. That brings us to... Oh, my gosh, Sarah, you're back up. This is Race.
This one's a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jesse Owens. It's Jesse Owens at the 1936 Olympics, basically giving the middle finger to Adolf Hitler as he wins 4 gold medals.
Up yours, Nazis!
Exactly. It's about the up yours to the Nazi party, courtesy of the U.S. of A.
Mm-hmm.
It's a movie called Race about Jesse Owens.
It's about
Race. So it is not subtle. The point of all of this is obvious from the very first moment. It mainly revolves around Owen's relationship with his Ohio State University coach, played by Jason Sudeikis.
And a little bit of a leading, you know, serious fan turn.
The legendary Larry Snyder, so for track and field fanatics, you know who that is. The movie is professional. It means well. It is also
means well.
Really tired, really melodramatic, and it's... It's interesting that the biggest takeaway from the film is the complexity of how Leni Riefenstahl. So if you know who that name is,
nope.
If you know who Leni Riefenstahl
is, hey,
that's more interesting
Sarah's
than Jesse Owens.
My time.
Okay, Brian.
I'm here to talk about Rams. Rams is not playing in a theater near you, but if you live in Seattle or a major metropolitan area, maybe it is. It stars a bunch of Icelandic people whose names I cannot pronounce. It's directed by an Icelandic man whose name I cannot pronounce. It's one of my favorite movies I've seen in the past year. It is a story of a pair of brothers who raise sheep in a small town. They haven't talked to each other in 30 years, even though they are neighbors. Bad things happen, not of the kind of cruel, demonic happenings, but that force the brothers to come at odds and actually have to talk to each other. It's beautifully told. It's weirdly funny. It's intimate. It might sound particularly dry, an Icelandic story of two brothers learning whether or not they hate and can reconnect. It is touching. It is human. It is only 90 minutes, and it packs a lot into that time period, and it just kind of gives you the warm and fuzzies at time.
All right. Rams, which brings us to, our biblical spectacular. That would be Risen. Now, if you're not familiar with the story of Jesus Christ...
Heard of him.
And a passion play.
He's a bowling
right.
Bowler guy,
he gets stabbed on the cross. He dies. 3 days later, he rises from the grave and then meets with his apostles and then vanishes in a, kind of a puff of dandelion clouds is the way this film portrays Risen. Now, the catch is Risen, directed
there
by Kevin...
There are no dandelion crowds.
Sounds like science fiction
a little bit.
To me.
It's kind of... So, directed by Kevin Reynolds, you've got Joseph Fiennes, who's actually witnessing all of this as a Roman... who's a non-believer, but becomes a believer as he's witnessing Yesu, played by Cliff Curtis, and, or Yeshua.
Yeshua, as this film calls him.
Yeshua, Cliff Curtis, a Jesus of color, as one might say, but of light color, but of color still nonetheless. So Joseph Fiennes, playing the Roman, watches all of this, watches all the miracles happen.
This
the gist of
horrible.
This being...
And it isn't.
It's not actually bad.
It's actually pretty good.
It's actually halfway decent. The issue I take with it is basically you've got all the followers and they just have kind of these wide-eyed gazes and stares into space. There's not a lot of, say, ecumenical speak behind
all of this. I
don't
know. I think the movie's better than that. Okay. I think the movie's pretty solid. I have to say.
Okay.
I really did enjoy it.
But this is important because
I do. Yes, exactly.
This is a very Christian story.
Opening the same day as...
The Witch.
Which is also a very...
Christian story.
But it's...
On the polar opposite side. We're talking like Black Peter
Satan.
Side.
Satan.
But is so, also very fundamentalist in how it looks at religion.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they actually aren't as far removed from one another as you would initially think.
Right, but tell us a little bit about The Witch, because this I found fascinating.
And if I recall right, about a year ago we had Mr. Matt Oakes.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Silver Screen Riot, saw it at Sundance. His thing's finally out, and he loved it. I've been hearing nothing but great things for a year.
Well, so if people remember from Sundance, the Sundance Film Festival from last year, not the one that just got done now, but the 2015, Robert Eggers, the writer-director of The Witch, won the Best Director Prize for his debut film, which never happens at Sundance.
Before this, he'd been doing costume and production
design.
So, yeah.
The movie is about a 1630 colonial New England family, fundamentalist, very puritanical, so puritanical that the church in the actual township wants to expel them.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of getting banished and expelled, they just leave. Mm-hmm. And they go set up their own farm in this pristine clearing on the edge of this... You know,
thicket
wood. Wonderful, beautiful forest, thinking that God has led them there. There's something in the woods.
Yeah.
It is going to tear them apart from within.
Mm-hmm.
One of the genius tactics that Eggers takes with this movie is that he lets us know immediately that this witch, this titular witch, is real.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, she's not as big a threat as what the family actually does to themselves because of their own fundamentalist point of view, where they start ripping themselves to pieces by how they look at their eldest daughter, Thomason, beautifully played by this newcomer, Anya Taylor-Joy, who is just spectacular.
In fact, the whole cast
is great.
But
Even the kids.
They're all a lot of unknowns and unrecognized because they're all from London, England, and... These aren't like regular names and faces we've seen before, which plays into this perfectly.
Exactly.
So.
But they start looking at her and thinking she is responsible for all of the chaos and the tragedy that's been affecting the family. And she's just as innocent a bystander as everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically how a family, by using religion, actually destroys the faith of the one that is most near and dear to their hearts. It's extraordinary. I'm not sure it's scary per se, but much like It Follows and The Babadook, it's not really about trying to scare you. It's trying to disturb and unsettle you on a much deeper, primal level. And as such, it's talking just as much about 1630 New England as it is 2016 U.S. right now.
Right. And see, where I think this is, it is scary. It's a slow burn scary. It's not the... The catch is about what makes this scary is that this is scary for what was scary in 1630. And if you can put your mindset in that, this is real. The thing is that all of the stories and all of the devil representations and all the witchcraft that we're seeing here, this is actually based on American folklore. This is stuff that was actually written about in New England where what people perceived as witchcraft, this was what, you know, what the kids are saying here when it appears as though they're demonically possessed. These things were actually said by kids who they thought were demonically possessed back in the 1630s.
And Eggers researched all of that. So, he gets it all from these source materials.
And so, and having read up on a lot of witchcraft in my day, I'm looking at this going, yep, that happened. And I'm going, wow, this guy, I mean, this is before I did any of the research on the film, went, this guy nailed it.
Oh, it does.
So,
but at the same time, but just as a cinema, I mean, so he does all of that. And let's also, The dialogue is in period 1630s colonial dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how Shakespeare has his...
Yeah. Got to dial your ear in to be able to hear this.
This is a lot of these and thous and thines, and you have to really...
Mm-hmm.
You have to slip into their cadences. And when you do, it's just mesmerizing.
Yeah.
But as a filmmaker, as just a straight-ahead filmmaker, Eggers instantly emerges as a talent that just boggles your mind as to what he might have in store for us. This movie echoes, in a lot of ways, Ingmar Bergman's The Virgin Spring or Hour of the Wolf.
The Virgin Spring.
It also echoes Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth and its sort of lyrical, dark fairy tale quality. But it also echoes, and most importantly, and it's obviously, it's going to be the one that's most obvious to anybody that watches it, Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, just in the tone and the style and the visual compositions. And yet, Eggers isn't a mimic. You feel those influences, and yet he makes them all his own, and they work perfectly and beautifully inside this film.
Yeah, I feel like the horror that he's writing, too, in sense, is like, it's as though you're finding the horror in Edgar Allan Poe or H.P. Lovecraft or another writer from, you know, a way back when, where we look at him and go, well, that's not really scary. Why is that scary? But when you actually think about it and you let it play upon you, these are the things that will keep you up late at night.
So and I have to say, I listen... You know, we're in the middle of election season. We're listening to these Republican and Democratic debates. I keep listening to what people are saying, and I'm going to throw the Republicans under the bus here a little bit, but I keep listening to what a lot of these supposed, you know, Christian conservatives and evangelicals are saying about these candidates. And it's not much different than what the families are saying here in this movie set in 1630. And that, to me, is terrifying.
Sure, sure. So where do you come in on this one, Sarah?
This is likely to be one of the best films I see all year. It is a high theater. You need to see this immediately.
Right, and I'm with you on that one as well. Theater all the way on that one. And, Brian, you did not get a chance to catch
this. Going on Saturday
morning. So there you go. We know what you're seeing. I want to hear
going with the masses,
I want to hear what your full report is on that. So. To summarize real quick here, we got Deadpool with two theaters and one skip, The Witch getting two strong theaters, and we just went through a whole slew of things. Risen getting moderate remarks from Adam and Sarah. Race getting moderate remarks from Sarah.
I would say skip, actually.
Yeah, okay.
Hey.
Rams getting
theater.
Theater from Brian.
Must see.
Zoolander.
Must not see.
I'd say Rent.
Okay. Don't have to
How
see.
To be single.
Rent.
Rent and Touch with Fire. Also Rent or Wait for Lifetime. Yeah. So that's kind of where we're at there. The big thing that's looming in the room with us right now as well, and we got about 15, 20 minutes to hash through a bunch of this, Oscar. February 28th. How do we sit on this? Where is this all coming in now at this point?
I mean, this has been a very fun Oscar race because last year there was a little bit of a who's going to win Birdman Boyhood, but most years, at least recently, you've had sweeps. You've had Argo seemingly winning everything, King's Speech. You know, you might have a little bit of a toss-up here and there, but going back to maybe 2007 might have been the last year where there was really this much kind of mix-up. And that makes for a more exciting show because when you sit down to watch it, depending on the kind of person you are, like I like seeing all the hubbub. I could watch 20-minute speeches. I just kind of enjoy seeing quality cinema celebrated even if I don't like everything that they nominate. But if you watch it to kind of see who wins, and not just the speech, but like like there's a little bit of a, I don't know who's going to win, that adds a little spice to the recipe.
And maybe we'll disagree with this when we actually make predictions, but this is a weird year, and I think that in that I think, and I'm kind of thinking we're all going to agree with this, there is only, of the major categories, I think we would all be in agreement, there's only one close to 100% lock.
Leo.
And that's Leo for The Revenant.
Yeah.
Now, again, maybe we'll disagree when we get into our actual predictions.
Mild disagreements, but.
But I think if you try to look at it objectively, yes, there are some certain things that are very close to being locks.
Yeah.
But the only thing I think any of us would actually say, if we had $1,000 and we had to go bet $1,000, we would all bet it on Leo right now.
Sure.
Leo.
So where are we coming on the other ones here, though? I mean, if we're trying to transpose our mind into the mind of a 65-year-old white male, which is generally the voting average for Oscars.
Where shall we start? What would you like to start with?
Let's begin at the beginning of the list there that you've got.
Well, let's see. The show tends to start a little strong, so they don't like to give off cinematography first. Oh, I love cinematography.
The best supporting actress is first.
Supporting actress. I know Sarah and I were talking about this earlier. This is one of those ones, I wouldn't call it a lock. I don't think it's a lock, but I think
there are three
compared
strong,
to some of the other ones.
There are three contenders and two also-rans here.
Okay, so why don't we just rattle off the names so folks who aren't aware yet are able to keep up with it.
So the contenders are, let's see, Sarah, you have them right in front of you right now.
I have, it's Jennifer Jason Leigh for The Hateful Eight, Alicia Vikander for The Danish Girl, Kate Winslet for Steve Jobs, Rachel McAdams for Spotlight, and Rooney Mara for Carol.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this point we can pretty much say that Jennifer Jason Leigh and Rachel McAdams,
they're out.
We're happy you're here. Good for you.
Yeah. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming. You've got your Oscar nominations finally. Mm-hmm. You both deserved them for quite some time. Yay you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a race between the other three women.
And then it gets interesting in part because you have two lead performances nominated for supporting, which is, I know, something we've kind of harped on, but it is strange. Not that Kate Winslet's not in Steve Jobs a lot, but she's clearly not the lead.
No, she's clearly a supporting actress in that film.
How do you compare stuff? And Alicia Vikander has the strong thing of she had a hell of a year.
Six films.
Big-time films, big-time nominations across the board, multiple types of films.
And Mara has been nominated before.
Mara has been nominated before, but I think she's a pretty safe not win. Carol got some nominations, but didn't get everything, didn't get Best Picture, didn't get Director. I think she's a safe not in. So we're really talking about Vikander versus Winslet. I think it's going to be Kate Winslet.
Really?
Because nothing against Vikander. I think it's a film that by no means they seem to love, but definitely, I feel like has had better general momentum. It seems to be one that's talked about a little bit more. They like to give people who've won before extra awards, particularly in supporting.
Well, here's what I'll say. I had been leaning towards Winslet, and this had everything to do, and this is again getting into the mindset of the Oscar voter has nothing to do with what I would want to win, what I would hope would win, but getting into the mind of the Oscar voter, they don't always just think in terms of what is the best.
Agreed.
They also think of what is the best imagery. Who did we just say was the only guaranteed lock for this year?
Leo.
You can't tell me that, especially an older Oscar voter, doesn't like the idea of Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet standing up on a stage, getting their picture taken together with Oscars. That has entered their mind.
Let alone the old ones, let alone people in their early 30s who are like,
And that's the wrong reason to win an Oscar, but I'm saying it's possible. Now, don't get me wrong.
So who are you
I think Kate Winslet's genius in Steve Jobs. So I have no problem with her win, but I think Vikander wins because she had an amazing year. Again, six films, even though a couple of them weren't that great.
Workhorse.
But she was fantastic in all six.
That doesn't
she
mean
is the though. Lead actress in this film.
Yep.
She is extraordinary in it. It's one of the best performances of the year, period. Oscar likes giving it to the young, up-and-coming ingenue. And I would disagree in that I think Oscar voters like that movie more than they like Steve Jobs. If you look at the four nominations and the categories that they're in, I think Alicia Vikander wins this for The Danish Girl.
Yeah.
But
and
no
and
money.
I would agree with you on that, and I would agree, but on a different angle, buzzworthy. I think we've heard more buzz about The Danish Girl than we did Jobs. I think
that
Jobs
has everything to do with the studio. See, the studio dropped the ball there.
And for me, I would disagree there. I think there's been more buzz for people turning on to Steve Jobs film-wise, but Alicia Vikander versus Kate Vikander's the new face.
Okay.
So, but I'm picking Winslet as the winner.
You're going
Sarah,
Winslet.
You're going Vikander then?
Going Vikander.
And I'm going Vikander. Yeah.
All right. So, best supporting actor. We've got Mark Rylance in Bridge of Spies, Sylvester Stallone in Creed, Tom Hardy in The Revenant, Mark Ruffalo in Spotlight, and Christian Bale in The Big Short.
Ruffalo, Bale, thanks for coming. You're nice.
You know what? This category is crazy.
This is going to be a lot closer than that, though.
Yep.
I would say Christian Bale, you're gone. And
only because he just won.
Right. And Mark Rylance, you're gone.
Oh, no. I think Mark Rylance is the upset pick.
Pick. See, Rylance was the favorite early on.
Yep.
Won a ton of stuff.
Yep.
People love him.
Yep.
We're talking about older voters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, older voters aren't going to look at Stallone like, I got to reward that career of Expendables 1, 2, and 3 and Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
They don't know who Rylance is. They love to give awards. You think they like to give awards to people that have won before? They love to give awards to people who they've never seen before. Most people, Mark Rylance is that character.
Yeah, he was kind of.
And they love Bridge
of Spies. He was the out of nowhere. That is true in all of this.
Well, he's also the takeaway from that movie for a lot of people. He's what people talk about first when they exit that movie.
Yeah.
Now, same time, what people talk about first after they exit Creed is Sylvester Stallone.
It's the best he's been in years.
Yeah. And it is a wonderful story, and Oscar likes wonderful story.
They do.
It does remind me a little bit of Burt Reynolds versus Robin Williams all over again. Burt Reynolds was going into that year's Oscars. Burt Reynolds was everybody's pick to win for Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Everybody was sure he was going to win. It was guaranteed he was going to win. And then Robin Williams took home the Oscar for Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
And if that happens again, I think it's either going to Tom Hardy or Mark Rylance.
Mm-hmm.
And if it goes to Tom Hardy, then that means The Revenant is going to win a ton of stuff.
I see exactly where that's going, because it lines up all the pool cues or all the pool balls on the pool table to tink, 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 you know, perfectly right down a line.
But I don't think that's happening.
I don't either.
Okay, so who do you think's going, Brian?
I think it's going to be Rylance, to be honest.
Okay.
I think Stallone's definitely the number two on that, but I do think Rylance is going to be, and you know, they talk about like, oh, we'll give the award, the movie, a film,
we'll give the film
one award that kind of recognizes everything. Yeah. I think that will be the award.
Okay.
I keep waffling back and forth between Rylance and Stallone. Mm-hmm. This is a lot more difficult a pick than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how the Oscar voter reconciles giving Stallone an Academy Award, and it's not so much that he doesn't deserve one. He's won one before. He's won a couple of them before.
Yeah,
for Rocky.
Yeah,
the same character.
Been practically 40 years.
But he's never won one for acting. And when you look at the dogs on his resume, I don't know how they do it.
Those dogs are barking.
I am still gonna pick him. Okay. I am picking Stallone. But I don't like it. Yeah. It's making me really uncomfortable.
Sure, sure. So it was out of nostalgia, for the sake of brevity, I'm going to say Tom Hardy on this, just because I have a feeling it's going to go in the world of Iñárritu.
So should we go quickly through some of these older categories?
Yeah, let's go through some of these others here. What else do we have lined up here? It's
screenplays. Because a lot of people don't know what screenplays. The thing with the screenplay versus most of the other categories. It will give it to something that might not win in other categories. Mm-hmm. You see Eternal Sunshine won when it didn't get a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a thing that happens. So don't necessarily go with a favorite. And this year we've had the weird thing of Revenant might be the big winner, like you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
No screenplay nomination.
Which hasn't happened since Titanic.
Yes.
So it's been since 1998.
Yeah,
who's in Titanic?
Yeah. A couple people that are nominated this year.
To cap something. But screenplay, like original screenplay, if you want to talk about things that look relatively locks, I'm not saying Leo level, but Bridges of Spies, people like, I don't think it's going to win. Ex Machina, not their type of film. Inside Out, animation ain't winning. Straight Outta Compton.
They're not going to give it to the white screenwriters for that film this
year. Spotlight, they love.
Mm-hmm.
Could win Best Picture.
Yep.
Spotlight's a pretty easy one there. And then adapted screenplay. Brooklyn is a film I love, but just doesn't seem to have the, I guess it has traction, but not the buzz. Carol, Martian, Room. I don't know about you, Sarah. For me, there's been a lot of talk about Big Short as kind of that third one, won the PGA. I feel like the screenplay is something that people really appreciated. The humor, something different, the amount of we're going to explain stuff to you. I think Big Short's actually
I think the Big Short has to win adapted screenplay if it's going to win Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Spotlight also has to win original screenplay if it's going to win Best Picture. If another movie upsets either of those two, then The Revenant is going to win Best Picture. I can tell you that right now.
But do you think those two films are going to win?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, I think it's very possible too.
I've been leaning towards Room or Carol in original.
Yeah,
I mean in adapted. Just so that those movies get something, especially in the case of Carol, because Carol looks like it's probably going to lose in every other category.
Yes.
But I think the buzz is with The Big Short, and I actually do think the Big Short is the film that has maybe the most momentum outside of The Revenant.
I mean, we're talking 65-year-old guys.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible.
Room, and that Carol based, is not them.
That based also on a number of the DVDs that came in on the SAG After Awards, where you can just see who has the deeper pockets, who's generating the buzz, Big Short, and the amount of press or the amount of material that came into my mailbox purely on that film alone tells me they dug pretty deep to try and get that into the hands of viewers and voters on that one. So I think there's a real strong possibility on that.
So before we do the big five categories, though, I want to bring up editing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should do this really fast. But the editing, it's Mad Max, it's The Big Short, it's Spotlight, it's The Revenant, it's Star Wars Episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all assume Mad Max is going to win editing because that's what it's been talked about. It's won every other precursor award up to this point. Here's the thing for people that are doing, again, betting as they go along during the night.
Win in your pool.
if The Revenant wins editing, mm-hmm. or if The Big Short wins editing, if either of those two movies win editing, mm-hmm. they're going to win Best Picture.
Hmm.
Now, do any of us think that Mad Max is not going to win editing?
No, I think Fury Road's got it.
It's its only real chance, I think.
Oh, I think it's got other. It's got the sound ones in the bag. I think it's
yes.
got.
Yeah,
it's
technical. I suppose that. It's going to sweep. It's going to take a fair amount of technical stuff.
I think Revenant and Mad Max split the majority of the technical awards.
Yes.
But I think stuff like costumes, maybe makeup, it's got a chance in both those as well. No. But it's going to win sound. It's going to win editing.
So the big five.
Yep.
Give me one.
All right. So if we're going to start with, let's start with actor because we did supporting actress first last time. So best actor, mm-hmm. and because we already know where we're going with this, Bryan Cranston in Trumbo, Leonardo DiCaprio in The Revenant, Michael Fassbender in Steve Jobs, Eddie Redmayne in The Dangerous Girl, and Matt Damon in The Martian.
Mm-hmm.
Leo.
So in 10 years, mm-hmm. I'll be brief.
Yeah.
When people are like, man, when's Fassbender winning? Mm-hmm. Fassbender
exactly.
should have won before.
He should have
won. This will be the movie that he point out.
This will be one of the ones you should be pointing out.
Yeah.
And then when you say, oh, they shouldn't just give awards to people because they haven't won yet. Remember, this happens. It's a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If Pacino had won before,
he would not have won for Son of a Woman.
Denzel would have won for Malcolm X.
Yep.
It would have happened. Then you wouldn't have had when Training Day came along. You like Training Day, fine. But you wouldn't have been like, man, Denzel hasn't won. How the hell is that the case?
Yeah.
But Fassbender had won. And, he just hadn't won lead.
And to be
honest,
you know
what people think.
Fassbender should have won for Shame years ago.
He should have been nominated.
Or nominated.
Should have won for Hunger.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he should have been nominated for. No, I mean, but that's. I mean, Oscar is littered with great artists in all mediums who never won
mm-hmm.
or winning for things that aren't their.
And
best.
Then also mm-hmm. won for things that were not their best effort.
So
now that does not. Leo is brilliant in The Revenant. He's fantastic. He is going to win because of the suffering that he did on the set, not for the performance.
Yeah, he was challenged for the role, but not verbally, you know. So
that's not necessarily.
But come on. I know some folks who were saying, well, he didn't have any dialogue. I'm like,
that's fine.
But he still had to react.
He foams at the mouth like he's on those Quaaludes again.
Yeah. All right. One more time.
I think more interesting is Best Actress. Best mm-hmm. Actress in a lead role, we have Cate Blanchett in Carol, Brie Larson in Room, Saoirse Ronan in Brooklyn, Jennifer Lawrence in Joy, Charlotte Rampling in 45 Years. This is an outstanding category.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we know Lawrence isn't going to win. And
no,
this is another example.
Yeah.
Not that Lawrence should or shouldn't win, but like if she hadn't won before, maybe there'd be a little discussion of her winning. She's won. She ain't winning.
Same thing with Blanchett.
Same thing with Blanchett. If she hadn't won 2 years ago for Blue Jasmine, might be in the running. So really, I think most people would say it's between Ronan and Larson.
Rampling
would have been
yes.
if she didn't like put her foot in her mouth and sound all racist.
Exactly.
Right. So it's really Ronan and Larson. And then even then, Larson's basically won everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Has she not?
She has.
What has she not won that's
well, so,
anything?
So Ronan won most of the critics' prizes, which don't really matter too much as far as Oscar is concerned.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to the Guild Awards and the Globes and BAFTA and stuff like that, that has been Larson. Larson's been dominating there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Larson wins this.
I think it's I think it's a lock. Personally.
I think if Larson and Ronan split their vote, Blanchett does have a chance.
Oh, I'd love it.
With the hanging chad.
Love Ronan
she
win.
Does.
There's a
but
ton
that's
of great...
only because that's only if they split their votes. And
sure.
But again, this is a year
killer.
Any
option.
Five of these women could win and I'd be perfectly okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All fantastic in that regard. So, okay, I think we're all on the same page on Larson. Best director. Real quick on that.
Inarritu.
You think so?
It's gonna be
well,
who else is it gonna be?
So best
it ain't
director
gonna be Miller. I'd love Miller to get it from Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't happening.
Nope.
And then Adam McKay ain't getting it for Big Short, not that type of movie. Even if that film wins,
mm-hmm.
I don't see that winning mm-hmm. Best Picture.
Lenny Abramson for Room.
Which ain't happening.
Tom McCarthy for Spotlight.
I think it could go Tom McCarthy, even though I want it.
Maybe.
I personally want it to go Inarritu.
Miller is the one I would rather it
Miller
went to.
Is
Miller
the
is,
one I want.
I mean, I think it's starting to twist into Inarritu's direction.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing that they're going to give him back-to-back Oscars. He'll be the first.
Hasn't he won basically everything? Though?
He'll be the first. No,
yeah.
Miller's won a few.
Of the big ones? DGA?
That's the problem. So DGA and BAFTA have all both gone to Inarritu, and that's a little crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's Inarritu.
But it's been since John Ford.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to suddenly put Inarritu in the same category as John Ford. I don't know if they're going to do that.
But they do. Oliver Stone won two very close awards in the 80s.
Yes,
they
but
they
were
back-to-back.
Back.
But that was more time than anything else.
Yeah, you know, no, like, directors can win multiples.
Yes, so I think
Oscar does not like to give stuff back to back if they can get away with it. I am sticking with my prediction of Miller because just the idea of this 70-year-old Australian icon doing this, I think, is going to be a strong story for a lot of Oscar voters.
When you hear someone screaming on the 28th really loudly, Witness, that'll be me if that happens.
Okay, okay,
sure.
Yeah.
But so the nominees for Best Picture: Spotlight, The Revenant, Room, Brooklyn, Bridge of Spies, The Martian, Mad Max Fury Road, and The Big Short. Mm-hmm. And I think we all know that it's three films. It's Spotlight, Big Short, and The Revenant.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's between those three. And
the moment of truth.
Yeah. And I mean, and using, normally I would want to use every Oscar analytic that I have in my pocket to tell you what is going to win, but none of the analytics apply this year. You can't do it. PGA went in a different direction than BAFTA. BAFTA went in a different direction than the Golden Globes. DGA went in this direction. SAG went in that direction. Mm-hmm. Everything, as far as any of that goes, is a mess. So then you try to base it on Oscar history, and as I just said, that's a mess. Mm-hmm. You can't do it.
So throwing a dart at the dartboard, what would you say?
I'm still going with The Big Short.
Okay. Brian?
I'm on Spotlight.
Spotlight? Yeah, I'll back you on that. I'll say Spotlight as well. I just have a feeling.
So nobody is gonna go with the Revenant freight train,
that
really?
That would be mine.
Because it looks like, it's building.
I get the feeling that Spotlight is this unspoken thing. It's this
We're talking about, where would we start this?
Yeah.
65-year-old guys. Mm-hmm. It's not saying there's nothing in Revenant for them to appreciate, nothing in Big Short. But like, Spotlight is the, I love vanilla ice cream. Mm-hmm. It is the vanilla ice cream, though. Nobody watches
but it's good
Spotlight.
Vanilla and, ice cream.
No, it's great. It's great. But it's nobody great watches Spotlight and goes, not very good. Now, it might be too meager for some. I think those people go for Revenant. And Big Short has a chance and that kind of stuff. But I do think there's going to be enough people, particularly an older crowd, who are going to see Revenant, get an hour into it. Nobody's talking. Yeah. He's eating buffalo tartare, and you're going like,
and I don't want to get too much into the weeds, but we got to remember that Best Picture is based on this preferential ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you rank all of the best pictures 1 to 8. And then there's this weird math that gets thrown in, and these get excluded and these get included, and your number 2 vote becomes your number 1 vote, and your number 3 vote becomes your number 1. I mean, there's so many different mathematical ways for things to work that it just, your head starts to spin. But the key is, you want, if your movie doesn't get the most number 1 votes, you want your movie to be on everybody's either number 2 or number 3 line. That's where you want your film to be. You want it on the number 2 line or the number 3 line. You are more than likely going to win if you are on more number 2 or number 3 lines than anybody else. Does anybody actually believe that The Revenant is going to be on a lot of number 2 and number 3 lines? The Revenant is going to be on a lot of number 1 lines, and it's going to be on a number 7 and 8 lines.
Well,
it's not going to be on a lot of number 2 and number 3 lines.
Yeah.
I don't think Spotlight is going to be on a lot of number 1 lines.
But
it's going to be on a ton of number 2 lines.
Yep. So there you go. So, I mean, we shall see, right? So the 28th, February 28th, Oscar will reign once again.
Do we have any time left to do animated?
We don't. We are plum
Inside
out of time.
That ain't a big five.
We are plum out of time, guys. So, you know, so there you go. Those are the big ones. Animated, we'll have to do a recap later at some other point. Otherwise, we're delving way into hour number 2. Can't do it. So, that being the case, this is Cinema Squabble episode 28. I'm Adam Gerke, Brian Zitzelman,
hey!
Sarah Michelle Fetters.
Woo-hoo!
And you know what? We will be back with you in about another 2 weeks or so to talk about all sorts of more things. You can catch
the
up
week
with
after
us.
The Oscars.
Yes, we'll do sort of a 2020 at some point here as well, talking about looking at Oscars of the past, how that measures up to present. I think that's kind of where we're headed with that. Brian, you're mouthing
we'll
something.
See.
Just
we'll
say,
see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right.
We'll see.
Well, we'll dig into all of that and much more to come. Again, you can find us at cinemasquabble.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher. And thanks so much for joining us.